You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we're going to be discussing several things this week, along with a feature topic which some people might not be able to identify with, but we think a lot of people will. But first up, news. We're talking Gremlins, we're talking Fallout, we're talking Terminator, we're talking people going bust, we're talking everything. So first up, it was rumoured last week that a Gremlins reboot could be closer to happening.
No!
What the hell would you want to do that for?
I think the big question is, what aren't they going to be rebooting?
The thing is that it is still rumour at this
pony.
Point. They already did that.
I was going to say they already did that.
Hey, what? Pardon?
That's where the whole brony culture comes from.
Yeah, because it's the reboot of My Little Pony. Are you okay,
Cookie? We've spoiled his world now.
It's right, we can reboot it.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. It's why can't they reboot something like Battle of the Planets?
Maybe they will.
And it is,
Battle of the Planets was very much of its time.
Yeah,
but it still might work as a reboot. Or just let me watch the original again.
Oh yeah.
I want to reiterate, this is conjecture at the moment. Vulture is the only source for this information so far, and everyone who wrote about it in the past week has been basically kind of spieling off of that particular source.
It does make me think, though, because I mean, you get this a lot where multiple news outlets basically cite a individual source, and people, because they don't follow the sources, they just think that it must be true because so many different people are talking
about it.
Yeah,
there were a couple of sites that were talking it was true, but yet they're all actually technically talking about what got talked about on Vulture, which isn't 100% confirmable, so yeah. It could be Hammett. I bet there is probably someone somewhere in Hollywood thinking, you know, guys, you know what we need? We need a reboot of Gremlins. Yeah, that's what we need. And then kind of smokes a cigar, stubs it out and drinks a shot of whiskey.
But seriously, I'm beginning to struggle to think of an 80s film that they haven't rebooted.
What's that really grim one that your dad's got a tape of that's about that weird alien that goes around impregnating women and... or
it's Species.
Off... No, not Species. And that's not
80s. That was 90s anyway.
Yeah. Is it Exo? The one where it's like the woman ends up giving birth in the kitchen... and then, like, it's just this weird kind of... I'm going off on one here. It is a thing that your dad's got on VHS somewhere.
I know of it. I can't remember the name to save my life.
You know what it is, though. It's got that horrible...
There's a few like that. It's like there's the horror one called The Entity.
I think it is The Entity. It might be The Entity.
That, you see, that was like a ghost thing, rather, or like a demon thing.
No, it wasn't that one. This one was definitely an alien, so it's not The Entity.
I know one other one that they haven't rebooted as well.
Ooh. What's that?
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Classic.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I will put it, you know, say it's in, you know, just so it's on the record, if anyone even thinks about rebooting Ghostbusters, I will kill the world.
But there Ghostbusters again, 3 is going.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not a reboot. If they even, you know, new films are, you know, sequels. Even spin-offs, but if they even think about rebooting it, it's like, no. You don't do that.
I thought the story was about them, the original Ghostbusters, handing the torch to a new bunch of younger Ghostbusters to restart the franchise again.
I thought that was the real Ghostbusters cartoon series.
Well.
I
was the impression that's what they were trying to do, so they could... you know, possibly open for a couple more.
Nobody reboots a franchise in my town.
Though, speaking of towns, I just want to go off topic a bit here. The new Arnold Schwarzenegger film. I mean, we are talking about 1980s stuff, but Arnie's very much an 80s thing, really. But
almost an is it 80s
now. Again, they're still carrying on with Die Hard.
Yeah. But that film he's got a trailer out for at the moment where he's a sheriff or whatever in some American town, and they've got like... they got bad guys coming and they've got to tool up.
Yeah.
Deal. What was it? Does anyone know what it's called?
I can't remember.
There's trailers for it at the moment. Trailer for stuff with Arnold Schwarzenegger in Come to Your Cinemas.
Is it The Last Stand or something?
It might be The Last Stand. I don't know. I saw a trailer for it just before recording this, so yeah.
It must have been very memorable.
The trailer's really memorable. I remember there's this really short guy who decides to pick up like a two-handed broadsword type thing. Go, you might need this. Which was quite funny. But anyway, Gremlins reboot. I think everyone's a bit horrified by the idea.
Just don't.
One that they haven't rebooted yet, although I'm not entirely sure whether it's completely 80s or whether it's actually early 90s, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
No, they haven't, actually.
I can just see it now. That would all be CG.
It's only the last time that I watched it that I actually realised that it's film noir for kids.
Yes, it is. It's very film noir.
Yes.
I was just saying the one thing about the idea of having the Gremlins reboot that I just don't think it would work today is because of the amount of computer-based technology that everyone's relying on. It's like...
You still have to have your gizmo, wouldn't you? You can't turn him into CGI.
No. But I'm just thinking it's more about the fact that like all the stuff that would go wrong, you know, all the bits of kit, like the cars and stuff, it's not quite the same because it's like... So the Gremlins are going to be great at disrupting computer code on the latest Renault Megane or something, because so much of it's software now rather than hardware.
Yeah.
They don't do anything physical. They just have lots of really bad apps.
There's an app for that, yeah. Awesome.
A stairlift going crazy?
Just basically that spread of like a Gremlin virus on the internet or something.
Don't give them ideas, man. I know. I can imagine it now. I can imagine the car will go wrong because somebody's using their phone as a sat nav. They've downloaded an official app for something for sat navigation, not Google Maps, like one of the proper car.
No, just iOS maps.
Instead of oh my god, there's something on the wing. It's, oh my god, there's something on the wing mirror.
Yes.
A
little gremlin.
To wind down the window to push it off.
At least there's still microwaves around, so you know that they're still around as an anti-gremlin tool. It's okay.
Anti-gremlin tool.
Yeah. As long as you still got power.
Why would you want to get rid of them anyway? They were quite cute. I'd have kept them.
Well, the Mogwais were.
Yeah.
But the actual gremlins themselves.
Gremlins in the new batch, Gremlins 2, they were quite amusing.
I loved the second film. I wasn't too keen on the first film when I was younger, but I loved the second one.
Do you know what? I know how they could raise the stakes for a new Gremlins film. The Gremlins get at the local power station and cut power for the area. Leaving people to fend for themselves without energy. And that's because some of them have got renewables.
That'd be cannibalism within 6 hours.
Or gremlins in Cornwall roaming the streets when Southwest Water are out and about.
Why would you do... Well, just so that there'd just be sewage everywhere.
And amazing amounts of gremlins, considering the amount of leaks that are around.
Oh, that's true. Mind you, I think you could say that for a lot of water companies.
True.
So that is a very localised remake.
You just wanted to come around and shoot in your house, don't you? Leave that gremlin there. Leave it. Do not touch. Do not take it away. It's my gremlin. I
mean, with how much it rains in, not just Cornwall, but in the UK.
Actually, it would be a really bad idea to have Mogwais in England.
I wondered that when I watched it. You know, when you're thinking, even when you're little and you're watching these things, they don't get them wet. What if it rains?
Yeah, you're doomed. Mind you, I mean, just wasn't it snowing in the first film? Did any of them actually get outside in the first film?
No, because you spent most of your time in that cage, didn't you, in the first film?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And just generally in the house.
Yeah, and was there a bit in the school, or am I misremembering?
Oh, if they bring back Gremlins, they'll have to reboot bloody Critters as well, won't they?
Yeah, but then if you reboot Critters, then you've got to reboot Tremors.
Oh, no.
More bacon.
Yes, more bacon.
Did you know there was a Tremors TV series?
Yes.
Yes, we were aware of this. I haven't tried watching it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Mm.
I think, speaking of TV, though... there apparently could be a Fallout TV series on the way. Eurogamer caught this last week. Apparently some trademark applicationness has been going on with software by either Bethesda or ZeniMax in the US Patents and Trademarks Office for an ongoing television program set in a post-nuclear apocalyptic world. You
Can
know,
I just give it to HBO to do then?
It would, that would be all Showbiz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Showbiz or Showtime? No, Showtime.
Showtime.
Yeah, yeah. Showtime.
That'd be awesome, then.
Yeah.
I'll give it. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah.
As long as you get to a good studio.
Basically, just don't give it to Fox, because otherwise they'll mix up the running order of the episodes and then cancel it after one season.
Yes.
Half a season.
Yeah, half a season. Yeah. Yeah. Even, I mean, this idea is going on the fact that the guy behind Three Dogs Voice from Fallout 3 tweeted the other week that some Fallout goodness was going to be heading our way, and then Eurogamer speculated out, well, with this patent application, trademark application, what if it was actually a TV series rather than Fallout 4? And I'm conflicted here. Would I want a Fallout TV series, or would I want Fallout 4?
Well, I want a Fallout 4.
Can't we have both?
I would like both.
Yeah.
It'd be great. Up. It'd be great if actually we got both, and the storylines of the two were entwined.
Hmm. Well, that'd be pretty cool.
Well, the world is big enough and they're isolated enough.
Yeah.
I would like a TV series so long as it was done well.
I think part of the problem when you're kind of dealing with TV series is that the initial audience has to be, you know, right. So, say, for example, if you've got like a niche type thing like superheroes or whatnot, and you have an absolute massive budget and, you know, it's really, really successful in the first season, they're going to measure future seasons by that, like Heroes. You know, yeah. the first season did phenomenally. The rest of them flopped because they didn't actually realize that, you know, it was, there was only a small percentage that actually watched it for like their kind of superpowers, and instead others watched it for
the drama.
Also, Heroes went really crap.
Yeah, but
it did have season, didn't it? Well, I thought so anyway.
I enjoyed Heroes all the way through, but I think the point is basically that, you know, you've got to have your initial audience and kind of maintain it rather than kind of having a large initial audience and then having it feel, you know, kind of.
But I think this is part of the problem with TV now, because it's such a fragmented platform. Haha. It's really hard to get big viewing figures.
It's not just that, but it's also, you know, when people view it. Because, I mean, stuff like, you know, you've got, like, 4 On Demand, you've got basically TV recorders now as well. It's like, how do they exactly measure how many views each episode gets? I mean, is it just the initial viewing, or do they take into account people kind of looking on
they
it?
Actually, you know, they do take into account people who record it on the Skyboxes, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you'd think with other digital distribution channels that it would be easier to monitor how many people are actually tuning in compared to people just watching it through something like terrestrial or, well, I say terrestrial, sorry, Freeview now or Freesat. Because you clearly can't tell who's checking in. You have all the figures based on viewing figures is an extrapolation of who's got various bits of monitoring kit, and then kind of figure out from that how many people are actually watching in general.
Because I'm pretty sure BBC iPlayer monitors what you watch as well for the viewing figures, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably very easy to kind of monitor that kind of service, but whether they necessarily, I mean, because obviously they have to come up with the figures after a certain amount of time. What happens, you know, when you've got like an episode that's available on that, you know, platform for 30 days? You know, they don't exactly wait 30 days for everybody to actually finish watching it before they release the figures, presumably.
Well, I know with Barb, I used to be on the Barb viewer board about 15 years ago now, but quite a while ago, and we got the boxes wired into our VCRs and our TVs, and whenever it switched on, we pressed a particular button of, you know, which one of us in the house was watching what channel, they would track what was recorded, and I know they have overnight figures, which is, you know, what they, you know, they base the initial things on, and then they have all the aggregates from downloads and, you know, rentals and things like that, you know, if there's any on demand. So it all gets added together, and at least in that way they can say, well, so many watched it live, so many, you know, caught up on iPlayer or, you know, whatever on demand service they're using, and so many people got it this way, especially with things like iPlayer now being on Skyboxes.
Do you know what's funny though, just talk about TV and viewing figures and that, one of was it a German TV channels are pulling off of their equivalent of Freeview by the end of this year. RTL announced that they're pulling out because they've got such little sort of like viewing percentage on their equivalent of Freeview in Germany, compared to cable and satellite. And in Germany, compared to here, their airwaves are being squeezed even more by mobile companies trying to grab all the spectrum. So they're like, there's like actually less spectrum for TV in Germany than over here, to the extent that German Freeview doesn't have any HD channels.
Oh dear.
So that RTL's like, fudge it, we're going to stop doing our Freeview channels and we're just going to be on satellite and cable and obviously online. Just wanted to throw that in there.
And of course, I mean, obviously, because you can watch, you know, not necessarily legitimately, but you can, you know, watch and download certain series without going through stuff like, you know, 4OD and whatnot. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there's kind of YouTube there's other kind of torrent sites and whatnot.
The torrenting is actually monitored in some sectors for to check how popular things are. I won't mention the particular company because I've done some work to do with them, but they have the ability to, they do monitor torrenting and stuff to check how popular the certain media products are. So they can advise people and stuff.
I mean, there is a large percentage of people who will torrent TV series because they just want to watch it. And they're the kind of people who, you know, they'll want to watch it, and then when it comes to a box set, or, you know, if it's like, especially if it's Blu-ray, then, you know, they'll leap on it.
Yeah.
I mean, as an example, I downloaded the entirety of The Wire years ago.
Wow.
And I watched it, and I now have the box sets, because it wasn't being shown on TV at the time. I wanted to see it, and as soon as it was available, I got it. So, you know, I'm one of those where, you know, it's effectively, you get it in the same way as if someone tapes it off TV, you know, going back to the old days, and then you borrow the tape, and you give it back. It's like, no, not to keep, and it's like, oh yeah, I'll have that, especially as, you know, a really nice box set, and you can watch it with any extras that come with it.
I mean, but the thing is, though, is that it's also the amount of stuff that we don't actually get on terrestrial TV here, even if, you know, the general public or, you know, even certain people would like it, which don't get shown it.
But that's a bit, but part of the problem is it's gotten worse over here since the recession started, because the BBC and Channel 4 said several years ago that they were going to cut back on American imports in order to cut back on budget spending. That's why the Daily Show's gone.
And it's not helped with, although the Daily Show is now on Comedy Central.
Yeah, but that's a Sky.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Yeah.
But it won't have been helped with Sky signing that deal with HBO. Sky Atlantic has just, you know, vacuumed everything up, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I was going to say Sky seemed to have realised this and jumped on, didn't it? Because, I mean, it's a lot more expense, but you do, with a lot of the shows like Game of Thrones, that only gets actually shown a couple of days after it's been shown in America now, rather than 7 to 8 months beforehand. And like with the Fringe finale at the weekend, it was actually shown at the same time as America.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of stuff that has done that.
Yeah, so they do seem to be taking notice of the fact that people don't want to wait anymore and, you know, download it, they will, so they're actually stepping it up and trying to get over it as quicker than normal, which is
so nice. Bringing this all back to the idea of a full TV series somehow. Okay, so if they to make the TV series, I mean,
hell yeah.
Do people think people would actually watch it?
Do want, so long as it's done well.
Yes. Give it to Fox. HBO. That's the only. That's my only thing with it. Give it to HBO.
I mean, the thing is, though, is that if it's going to be specifically Fallout, you know, TV series, then it has to reference the world itself of Fallout, because otherwise it's just a post-apocalyptic nuclear world.
Somebody joked it could be Rage. I was just like, nah.
Nah.
So, yeah, as long as they reference the Fallout universe.
You'd have to have Ron Perlman doing the voiceover to start.
Yes.
War never changes.
Okay, next bit of... Well, we got lots of, I think, mostly film and games news this week. Apparently, writers have been hired for the fifth Terminator film. Scarily, somebody out there believes that it's worth trying to make one after Salvation. But that somebody, I discovered, could very well be the... daughter of billionaire CEO of Oracle Larry Ellison, i.e. Megan Ellison, who's the founder of Annapurna, who are the current rights owners to the Terminator franchise, or at least the universe and all that, to be able to make media products. So I'm assuming they kind of want to make something before the rights have to revert back.
And now, you're saying, you know, even after... Salvation, you know, wanting to make a film. I think especially after Salvation, they should make a film.
Salvation could have worked if it'd been two separate films. It's really awkward having two protagonists that you spend really weird amount. It was conflicting viewing.
Also, if one of the protagonists, the storyline behind him wasn't pretty much bollocks, that would also have helped it.
Yeah.
Perhaps what they need to write into the script is that a Terminator goes back in time and kills the creators of Terminator 3.
Terminator 3 and Terminator Salvation. Just, wipe them out from history and everyone will be much happier.
And, I mean, I don't know, how did you feel about Sarah Connor Chronicles?
I didn't see enough of it to make a judgment.
I watched two episodes and got bored.
I watched the whole run, and it had definitely had potential. And it had What's-A-Face from Firefly, which was...
Summer Glau.
So that was it, Summer Glau, thank you. She was a very good Terminator.
Mm.
And they were doing some very interesting things with her character, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would show flash forwards in the future, and either her or her model, it was never quite, you know, clear. Was a little bit warped when it came to humans, and they were doing some interesting things with it. I mean, I wasn't saying, you know, it's not a fantastic series in its entirety, but it was going in interesting directions, and I was really annoyed at the point at which they, you know, it got cancelled.
Mm.
Especially because basically John Connor got time travelled into the future, into the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And that's when it ended.
I mean, because wasn't the time machine meant to be sending stuff back, but you can't go forward type thing?
I think
they must have broken at least one cardinal.
I'm sure. No, not just that, but they probably broke whole loads of stuff that had been canon and all that. The writers, the proposed writers for this Terminator 5 film, are apparently, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing names correctly here, Leitia Kalgirdis, the woman who was one of the women who's behind Shutter Island. And she wrote on the short-lived Bionic Woman TV series remake. And Patrick Lucia, who wrote and directed Drive Angry. It's an interesting mix. I actually really liked both Shutter Island and Drive Angry, which I'm sure people will find completely surprising, but I actually like Drive Angry.
I have to say, looking at the writers there, that is perfectly suited to Terminator, if you think about it. The Bionic Woman... and Drive Angry,
which is really over the top. Drive Angry, for those of you who don't know, was a Nicolas Cage kind of
vehicle.
Vehicle,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit like Ghost Rider, only
no,
it wasn't Ghost Rider, and he drove a car rather than a motorcycle.
And there was this whole thing going on with like afterlife and death and stuff, and
it's like Phantom Driver.
Yeah, and revenge and crazy things, and yeah.
Was he angry?
Yes, he was angry, and he drove. Funnily enough, brilliant title for a film. Who's seen Shutter Island?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Retroid?
Nope.
Okay, we won't spoil anything there, but you have to watch this film.
It is good. It is great. It is really messes with your mind.
I've heard it's good, but yeah.
I'm gonna go and say that I actually enjoyed it more than Inception, because they were released within the sort of same time frame.
Which I have seen.
Yeah, I actually liked Shutter Island more.
I mean, they're two very different styles of film.
I think it was the fact that Shutter Island it didn't rely necessarily on visuals all the time. It was more concerned with the plot a bit, be honest, and sort of running rings around you. I love that.
Yeah, I think that Shutter Island had this thing where it was like it presented the world in one way, but then it twisted it towards the end. Whereas Inception, it was almost like, you know, this is the world, this is how we're going to progress, and, you know, it did brilliantly, but, yeah, two different types of film.
With Inception, it seemed to be more of a trying to keep track of how many different layers and explanations and the rules they were, you know, you were given, and that kind of thing.
But that, in terms of film lore, I think it's always good when, you know, you have to keep in mind certain things. You know, when it's not just the basic world. You know, if it's something where, you know, you have to remember that, oh, if you go deeper, then time slows down, or if you get shot, then you get, you know, kind of going in deeper and whatnot, and how you get out. And yeah, I like films with lore like that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Same.
That's lore as in L-O-R-I. So
actual, yeah, logic, consistency, rather than just, this happens.
Going back to the chosen writers for the fifth Terminator film, well, the idea of a fifth Terminator film fills me with dread, considering what the last two offerings were. I do find if these two writers are actually going to stick with it for the moment, or will be allowed to stick with it, I think there's potential, because they've written some quite unusual stuff, and perhaps that's what Terminator needs, just as long as we don't end up with two protagonists at the same time.
Yeah, it bodes well for something like Terminator, where you do have the sort of twisty-turny cause and effect.
I'm going to move us on to, I think we'll talk about these two together, because there's pretty much the same situation, just two different businesses. After we were talking about HMV last week, like the day after, I think it was either the day the podcast went live last week, Blockbuster went into administration. Nobody was surprised by this at all.
Is it what they haven't already?
Yeah. Because that was in the UK more, but I do believe the US branch had been having problems last year, if I remember correctly. And Atari has filed for bankruptcy protection.
Oh, well.
And again, perhaps who didn't see this happening. Apparently they wanted to try and separate from their parent company, but at the same time, they're going to be selling a whole load of assets, including the Atari brand and stuff. And we're looking at over like 200 games titles that are probably going to be up for bidding in the near future.
May I just say that the Atari of today is not the Atari of yesterday in anything but name and IP. It's Infogrames, isn't it? Infogrames bought Atari, as in, you know, lock, stock and barrel, all the intellectual properties, the name, branding, logo, everything like that. So, you know, the Atari, which is going titsup.com now, it's a French company.
Yeah.
We're wearing an Atari hat. And have Atari actually done anything good in the last 15, 20 years?
anything that's actually...
They did that Transformers game on the PlayStation 2, which was quite cool.
Did they actually do that, or was that just they published it?
I think they've mostly been publishers rather than developers for a long time.
But, I mean, the thing is that you always get this with games where, you know, developers will go through some sort of, you know, change and the rest of the catalogue is rubbish. I mean, like, Rareware, for example.
They were
amazing, like, during, like, the SNES N64. Even slightly on the GameCube. No, actually.
Did they?
I can't think of a decent one on the GameCube. So, I mean, the Star Fox Adventures, but that I wouldn't class that as necessarily decent. But then they got bought up by Microsoft, and...
Yeah, we all know how that ended.
Yeah.
But then, going back to the Blockbuster going into administration, I mean, I just don't understand why the company for so long did not adapt. Like, whilst Love Film, before Netflix, because obviously we didn't get Netflix till quite late, actually, when you think about it over here. But whilst Love Film were making inroads, like nobody's business.
It was just blindingly obvious, isn't it? That it should have been them. It's like, come on, it's so obvious. You make your money renting films.
And games.
And games, you know, and the internet comes along, and they just did the equivalent of the record industry with MP3s.
I mean, it's just, you'd have thought they'd have smelled the coffee and woken up a bit when Choices went under. And that was how long ago?
Oh, that was a while.
And that was just as Love Film was really starting to make inroads, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you'd have thought they'd have seen trend then.
I mean, okay, so they would have had to have laid off staff and stuff, but nothing to the degree that's happening essentially now.
Yeah, laying off and probably eventually closing your shops if you go, you know, the Netflix Love Film route.
Yeah.
Is going to be a hell of a lot better for pretty much everyone involved than liquidation.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that it was like, well, you guys, you could have cut back on people, could have gone to a warehouse model rather than a rental store model, and at least you had all the stock. And the contacts with suppliers and everything and distributors that you could have, you know, they could have kept going, was the fact that they didn't evolve.
There again, to be fair, a company needs money to evolve. So if they weren't doing that well to begin with, they wouldn't have money to change.
It's been going on for so long, though.
Yeah, I know, but the fact of the matter is that chances are they wouldn't have the cash finances to change the model.
Do you know what? Go back to HMV. The funny thing hearing in the past week, it was like Game piping up, going, oh, we're interested in buying some of the HMV stores. It's like, you guys, what did you guys go through last year? Didn't you go through something? So you suddenly want to expand again. What the hell? Or maybe switch stores, but it sounded more like an expansion drive, and it was just insane.
So this was Game rather than the, I presume, because was it a parent company that kind of bought them all?
No, I can't remember who bought them. Was it a parent company? But but yeah, it's just like they can't. It's too much risk for them to go through, considering what happened last year. And at the same time, I don't want HMV to go. And you know what is also annoying me about conversations about HMV? Everyone's focusing on the music, and it's like, yeah, I know they originally sold music, but I'm not sure if you realise, but they're one of the few places left on the high street for DVDs and Blu-rays.
I mean, what else have you got?
And funky t-shirts.
Yeah, merchandise. I mean, the one in Carlisle.
Headphones.
Yeah.
Although that was apparently quite a recent thing, and they do iPods and things like that. But yeah, you walk into the one in Carlisle, it's mostly DVDs. They have a music section, but it's smaller than the films. They have a games section, and I think was it last year when they started doing pre-owned games.
Yeah, some of them.
That's when the klaxon was really going off at the back of my head, with the really, you're a big high street mainstream store like this, you happen to sell games, and you're going to be doing pre-owned games. Because that's always been the lure, hasn't it? There's GameStop in the US, Game and Game Station over here. Their idea that you could buy them in cheap and sell them on, a few quid cheaper than new releases. Yeah, right. You know, just ask a game how, you know, how well that went for them.
Oh.
Daft, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, oh, come on. So, yeah. But, yeah, everyone's been going on about the music and said, yes, they do sell music, and they are one of the few places that, you know, still sells music in the high street.
But the thing about all the music crowd is they're going, well, they killed off all the independent record stores, so it's karma coming around kind of thing. And it's like, maybe they killed off a lot of independent record stores, but instead of actually getting entertainment that isn't music, it's become problematic unless you just want to order online.
I mean, HMV... His Master's Voice, that's what he stands for. Hence the logo and everything. But, yeah, they must have been making most of their money from films, box sets.
Yeah.
Especially box sets.
Easily.
Bits of merchandise, games. But, yeah, music, but music is just one of them.
Thing is, though, is that it's just the evolution of, you know, the way we buy stuff. I mean, before we had, like, supermarkets and whatnot, we had, you know, smaller stores. And before we had smaller stores, we had, like, outdoor stalls and whatnot. So, it, you know, each one has progressively killed off the last generation. And now we've just got to the age where, you know, people finding it easier, cheaper, and, you know...
Do you know what? It may be...
More accessible to actually buy online or stream online or download and whatnot
It may be cheaper to buy online or to stream online or whatever. My issue is that it doesn't help me if I don't know what I want.
Yeah, if you just want to browse.
If I just want to browse, it's not actually with the most setups for websites and stuff or for digital services. It's not set up in a way where browsing is intuitive, that the same as window shopping is.
I mean, admittedly, I think if you actually put... like Amazon together with IMDb, that would be the ultimate, you know, DVD platform, because, you know, even on like the IMDb app, there's like, you know, you go to a film, and it will basically say, oh, buy this on Amazon.
Actually, like, does Amazon own IMDb already? That would be my suspicion at this point, but I can't access the internet right now.
Yeah, but I mean, that would be the ultimate kind of in browsing, because, you know, you can just go, ooh, I like that actor in that one film. I'll see what else he's been. Ooh, he was in that. Oh, he was in that as well. Oh, I'll buy those.
Can anyone actually check if IMDb's owned by Amazon right now?
I'll have a look.
Yeah, if you just go on imdb.com, it'd be at the bottom. So basically, our high streets are changing. Our games companies are changing. I mean, the whole idea of games companies. I mean, we've had THQ before Christmas. So somebody like Atari following suit, essentially. Isn't surprising, though. At least, you know, Atari don't have the likes of Udraw to their name.
No, that won't have helped.
Yeah.
Hang on, let's see. Our Amazon company, IMDb.
Is it at the bottom?
Yeah, it says right here. Copyright.
That's
blah, blah,
that's
blah,
why
blah.
It's linked up like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you see what HMV need to do is they need to at least partner or set up their own version of something like Spotify or Last.fm.
Yeah.
And they want to convert several of their shops to something more like Argos.
That'd be good.
Yeah, they need, because they don't really need much of a browsing experience. You just need to have the stock available. And most of that can be delivered online, but if people want to actually walk into a shop and, you know, have a look and, you know, listen to listening spots. Yeah, have a smaller shop, same amount of stock.
I mean, to be honest, that's to a certain extent why I think Argos aren't doing as badly as other stuff. I know I really shouldn't be, you know, talking about this being, you know, an employee and all, but I think it's a good thing that Argos have like a basically warehouse at the back and a shop at the front, rather than just having like all the stock on display.
Argos have benefited in that way, and I was just thinking about this. Because when it comes to, I mean, you know, because I am such an old bastard when it comes to games. I mean, I'm not an old bastard, but when it comes to games, you know, when I were a lad. So I remember when in Carlisle, no games were sold in shops apart from tiny little independent shops. And it was a real event. Most of my game shopping was done from small ads in magazines. And they were put on the same shelves as the, you know, the men's mags. because they were the weird, we don't know where to put them, so we're going to put it next to Mayfair. It's like, yeah, yeah, I'll pick up my copy of Zap 64 and not Asian Babes. But so I'd have the situation where it would be a tiny little shop in Denton Home, which is, you know, a tiny, almost like a one of those small shopping districts, which is more like you'd find, you know, a high street in a village.
Okay.
That kind of setup where it would have lots of little independent shops. And I'd be going down there and I'd pick up the games and you'd have someone running it who would really know their thing and you'd be able to pick up what you wanted. And then most of the big releases would end up getting stocked in Boots and Woolworths, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And then we started getting Future Zone, as it was, which was bought up by Game and Game Station. So you've had all that progression there. And now most of the game purchasing is done online. So it's almost as if we've seen a microcosm of the high street entertainment market, where you've gone from tiny little shops being run by enthusiasts because no one else would do it, to larger shops, to mainstream shops stocking the big releases, and now everything's gone online. And it's just the rest of the high street, rental with Blockbuster and mainstream entertainment purchasing with HMV, it's finally catching up with them as well. It's a bit sad, but it's like with, oh, isn't it so sad what happened to, was it Kodak? And, well, no, not Kodak, it was Polaroid.
No, Kodak, yes. Well, Kodak went under last year.
Mm. Oh, that was it. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, and like the only thing that might get them not having to severely deal with creditors is like that I think they're still auctioning off patents and stuff.
Yeah, they'll have a lot of patents to them.
Yeah, so that's I think like loads of companies have been buying those up.
I know you can still find Kodak printers and ink cartridges, still plenty.
Yeah, so it's just like a lot of these older companies. They're too worried about their knee-jerk reaction is not to do anything which could damage their core business, and none of them seem to realize that their core businesses are dying.
Mm.
And they need to desperately pump money into, like, you know, Blockbuster needed to desperately get into online streaming.
Mm.
Or at least, you know, online post a DVD and have it for a week and then send it back.
Mm.
Just like Kodak needed desperately to get into digital photography and, you know, printing and all those kinds of premium things that, you know, people would like to do.
I think part of the problem is that there is this pull between, you know, internet and whatnot, and you know, sort of like on the high street type stuff. So I think people have been going the wrong way about it, because they've been like opening online stores and then finding that it's really popular online, so basically closing down their physical stores. But yeah, I think just evolving the physical stores, I think, you know, would be a good idea as well.
Having something physical that you can walk into is still going to have advantages over anything, you know, online only.
Online. Yeah.
I mean, personally, I actually quite like the idea of like renting a film or something like that, but actually having like a group of friends and just going into almost like a miniature cinema.
Well, so you get the big screen
experience, you know, but with a film that you want and with people that you want.
I thought years ago, and this is the example of, I would probably be a millionaire if I was already a millionaire to have the money to put into my ideas. sort of like a bar, if you want to call it that, like, you know, something like a club where you could rent a booth and it would have, you know, big comfy plush chairs and they would be soundproofed, but they would have you know, a big TV.
Where this is going now.
No, it's not that kind of thing. And it would have, you know, a big screen, and this was, you know, I was thinking of this, you know, before we had, you know, large LCDs. So, you know, they have to be like, you know, rear projection. But of course, these days you could just have, you know, a big like 60-inch HD TV. So, you know, plush chairs, and you could sit there and you could, you know, watch films that you could, you know, either rent the room or rent a film and the room. It would be like your own little private mini cinema. So, you know, sit there with a, you know, either your loved one or, you know, have a few friends over. You could, you know, call in, you know, a waiter and get drinks, that kind of thing. But you could have this sort of, you know, mini cinema experience.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, or you could play games.
Yeah.
So it's been my ambition for years to open up like a, you know, a game bar or something like that.
I think you'd definitely need the proper soundproofing.
Yes.
That would be the main issue.
You would definitely need to have the soundproofing.
Part of the issue would be making sure that you got material with the right rights to go with it, because that's one of the issues.
Yeah, true. Exhibition rights.
Yeah,
the whole public exhibition and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's that kind of thing where you should be able to do, you know, that kind of thing, but there's no way you can really do it. And cinemas are starting to really seriously piss me off.
I mean, another thought would have been basically some sort of digital download service, like in store. So that, I don't know, say for example, you know, you buy, I don't know, spend £5 and you can download any three films or like that. You just stick your USB stick in and, you know, pick the films that you want and take it home.
I've written before and stuff that I understand why there aren't downloads in store or haven't been already, when you use the fact that it's far easier a lot of the time for businesses to get fibre to premises compared to sort of home. So it's like, well, you could have fibre to premises, have a download booth and, you know, whatever physical mediums of choice or whatever you want to allow people to use, and they just get the content and go.
Yeah, because not everyone wants to have pay-per-view type things, you know, in their houses. Some people want the, you know, sitting with a bunch of friends, getting a little bit drunk, watching you know, something on a bigger screen that, you know, they otherwise would.
Yeah.
So because I was thinking about, you know, all these streaming concerts to cinemas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, why not do it so you could just, you know, stream it to a booth with, you know, with a few friends and, you know, sit there and, you know, watch it, and that way you don't have to go, you know, halfway across the country. But yeah, anyway. Paul's business ideas.
I'm going to move us on to our final subject of tonight, moving away from the news a bit, and what we do with the high street.
Burn it.
And basically, it's a subject that's come up with a lot of people I've seen on Twitter over the past year. It's something that people I know and people on this podcast have been feeling lately, and that's gaming fatigue, where you're not getting enjoyment from video games to the extent that you used to. You're not playing them as often, or you're not playing them for as long when you do.
I thought this was something that I was only I was feeling, because it's been happening for the past couple of years. And I think part of the reason why it happened for me was actually because I first got into gaming because of my stepbrother, who used to kind of bring around consoles and let me play on it, and, you know, slowly got into gaming. Well, not really slowly, fast got into gaming like that. And recently there's been like, had a couple of Facebook arguments, and, you know, value systems completely different, and I just wanted to kind of distance myself. And yeah, I think I thought at the time that it was just like me trying to emotionally distance myself from like his influence type thing. But if other people are feeling it, obviously that, you know, isn't the only factor.
Well, you say games fatigue, something that goes beyond issues that you've got with family members.
Yeah. It's all right, we'll get a prescription for you.
Yeah.
So you'll be right as rain. Take these pills in 7 days' time.
But Cookie, you said before we start recording that you've been having fatigue issues with games.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about it as fatigue. I just thought I'd lost my gaming mojo, to be fair. I am still playing games. I still enjoy playing games. I just don't get that wow factor or the buzz that I used to. which is really disappointing. You know, it's the best way to explain it is when I used to see news about a certain series of games, you know, I'd get all excited about it, I'd have to read it, I'd have to keep an eye on it, I'd have to download a demo and play the demo, see if I like it, then pre-order it and rush out to buy it on the day of release, get it in, lock myself away and spend 8 hours on there, you know, playing through it. But now, I've started playing Far Cry 3, which I'm really enjoying, but I keep thinking, I've actually seen this before in other games. I've seen this before in other games. I've seen this bit done before in other games.
Yeah.
There's a nice little twist to it, but other than that, it's not brilliant. I've started playing Assassin's Creed 3 at the weekend, which I'm into, and again, it's got its nice little twists, but it's all been done before. And I just want something wow. I used to... I don't know. It might be because I'm getting old. I don't know. It seems to have lost some of its momentum. And I think the more... I mean, I think it's just... It seems no longer more about fun anymore, if I look at it. The games industry itself doesn't seem to be about giving us fun and excitement now. It just seems to be a lot of politics and other bullshit that's with it.
I think another factor with people our age, I hate to say it, but our age, is...
And how old are you?
Is this idea of guilt. You know, I feel guilty for playing a video game because it's not actually progressing anything. It's not helping me with my everyday life. It's not, you know, enriching... Well, I would argue that it does enrich certain skills, but it doesn't help me kind of get ahead in life, as it were. And I think, to a certain extent... I think it is a little bit of guilt about that, because I mean, obviously, at our age, we want to be progressing our careers. We have aims of where we want to be in like 5 years, 10 years, and it doesn't seem to help.
I've heard that, but I can't say that's ever occurred to me, because I've always had the attitude that, well, you're either going to be sat in front of a game for a few hours, which because you're actively participating in something.
Hmm.
If not doing anything useful. And then, yeah, well, when it comes to, you know, our age, again, how old are you?
You really want to know?
Yeah, go on.
27.
On. Right, I'm 37.
Jet boy.
Yeah. So, you always had the situation where people would say, oh, gaming's a waste of time. Why don't you watch telly? And just... Do you realise what you're saying? Gaming's a waste of time, and you're going to sit there and you know, with your girlfriend or, you know, your wife, and you're going to be watching Home Makeover, soaps, and then maybe some sort of, you know, teen pop drama.
There is one thing you can do whilst watching telly that you can't do whilst gaming, though.
What's that?
Knit. You can knit or do things.
That would be quite... Well, yeah, that's one of the things you can do.
Yeah.
But I doubt most people actually bother to sort of take up their knitting needles or any knitting needles whilst watching the latest EastEnders.
I've been trapped in a room with football on the TV, which has tempted me to take up knitting needles, but not for knitting.
But now, recently I've been reading a book called Reality is Broken by Jane McGonigal. And it's like theories about how like computer games actually enrich our lives. And one of the things that she actually points out is that games actually make us anti-depressed.
Anti-depressed?
Yep. Whereas TV, they sink us into depression. But games actually make us...
Is that because of the fact that you're actually tending to do something in games? The fact that
yeah, exactly. You're participating, you're learning skills, you're, you know, achieving things. Whereas in...
Risk,
like,
reward.
TV, yeah, in terms of TV, it's very much designed to make you, well, to suck you in and, you know, basically keep your attention, and you don't necessarily...
On TV, it's always bloody depressing. What is it about bloody soaps and everything? We've got to blow up this. She's now got to lose her baby through an abortion. Yes, he's going to go on a rampant murder rampage.
See, that's no, why that's I never watch soaps.
Room with her, so.
or there's all the crime programs on.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like the good murder mystery, to be fair. I mean, I used to love watching Pyro and stuff like that. But
Murder She Wrote.
I have been guilty of watching that.
Uh-huh.
You have as well, Angela.
I've been trapped in a room with my nan when, because she's, you know, into all these, you know, kinds of things, and yeah, it's like stuff like Murder She Wrote, where it's telegraphed right at the start who the murderer is, and it's just banging my head repeatedly against a table while they all run around going, oh, it's such and such.
You seem to be trapped in a lot of rooms. I mean, have you got enough doors on your house?
Do you have
well,
keys?
I need to use keys to open doors. I don't shoot food. And sometimes I need food badly. That's what gaming has taught me. And I'm trapped in rooms. Also, exits are north, south, east, and west.
Fair. With Murder, She Wrote, I mean, this is going to sound really sad now, and I apologise, but I am. But the way it was done with a little bit of parody. There was a bit of humour. It's very light-hearted, whereas if you something nowadays like Walking the Dead or anything.
Walking the Dead.
Do you mean Waking the Dead?
So the Waking the Dead.
I just
see
someone dragging a corpse on a leash. Going,
straight away.
Come on, enjoy the sights. It's lovely this time of year.
But
you can see a trail of blood
from
I know it's got a dark material matter, but it is done such darkly, and darkly done. That's why I suppose most of the programs I watch nowadays are like Doctor Who, which has still got the light-sided bit to it as well.
I watch very little TV, and I find it really weird how people will look at TV as TV is TV. To me, TV is a display. You can watch things on it, and a lot of the time I watch a DVD or a Blu-ray or, you know, something like that on it, but, you know, or something on iPlayer. I very rarely watch anything live now. That's the thing. But when it comes to, you know, the whole are you wasting your time with gaming or, you know, feelings of guilt or anything like that, I don't get that. What I do get is, I think I'm a lot less forgiving than I used to be with games. I used to be able to just put up with certain game mechanics and you say, yeah, that's just, you know, oh, right, I have to do this. And, you know, you have to run from this place and go get that so you can do this other thing. And I was kind of slightly wondering if my mojo, whatever you want to call it, had, you know, gone. And then a particular game will come along and it will just, you know, have its hooks in me again. So things like Fallout New Vegas or, you know, an Assassin's Creed game or Skyrim or, you know, things like that. Those will still grab me.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Assassin's Creed, like I was saying, 3's grabbed me still. Just hasn't grabbed me to the extent that it games used to. It just...
Although I have heard Connor is a bit of a boring sod.
Actually, I'm... I don't want to spoil it a bit.
Don't spoil things.
I was going to say, don't spoil... I will play it. I'm just waiting for it.
I've already had to edit a podcast for somebody else in the past couple of weeks, which involved... I had to advise on the editing of a podcast in the past couple of weeks where there were spoiler issues for Assassin's Creed 3. It's still too fresh.
Yeah, I'm
all I was going to say was, to be fair, I'm actually engaging more with Connor than I did Ezio and Altair. This is my problem at the moment. I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it, and like I say, there's some nice little twists to it.
It's like you're liking it, but it's not grabbing you.
But it's not pulling me in. I mean, for instance, I can remember first time playing X-Wing. It blew my mind
that you could.
It blew my mind that I was in charge of this starfighter and it, you know, this amazing 3D graphics.
Oh, look, there's a TIE fighter. It's making the TIE fighter noise.
It's making the TIE fighter noise, and look, oh my god, it's blowing me up. Yes,
yeah, yeah, all that. Those things are awesome, but
just a case of I like it, but there's no punch. There's no extra oomph to it.
Yeah, I'm desperately waiting for Bioshock Infinite.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, even this year for the games, there's only a couple of games that really grabbed me and I'm really looking forward to. Whereas before, I'd have a list an arm's length.
Yeah, it's like I noticed it a bit when I was wandering around the Eurogamer Expo. And there are times I was standing in a queue and I was watching people play the game and I was thinking, well, I'm only going to get, 10, 15 minutes on this. And thinking, I'm going to be spending at least another 10, 15 minutes in this queue. I don't think I can be arsed with this game. And I just walk off. That game isn't really grabbing me from watching it. And it didn't help that even when I was, I thought, I'll take a little, photo of that. And there were people at the Tomb Raider display saying, don't take photos.
Yeah.
It's Tomb Raider! What's going to surprise it? Oh, it's a woman! Yes, we know. We've seen the screenshots. There have been videos released online of the entire demo playthrough, all that kind of thing. It's like, come on, it's not going to surprise anyone!
I can interject. For me, what I've actually been finding is games with like basic stories, I seem to get something happens so that, say for example, I can't play for a couple of days and I just never seem to get back to it.
I think
the mechanics have to be really, really, good in a game for me to actually kind of get back to it in a way.
For me, that would be something like Mass Effect 3, where I enjoy the game, I enjoy the story, and I enjoy all the lore associated with it. So that, that's like a triple whammy for me. I can just enjoy it on, pretty much all levels. I can enjoy it as a plain sci-fi, I can enjoy it as, a game. I can enjoy it for the, the voice acting and character. In it, apart from Vega, who doesn't really have a character that I can see. it's just I'm less forgiving of something. Oh, it's a game, I can play it. Sometimes that, that would have been enough, but I'm finding increasingly I can just not go back.
Yeah. I am actually finding that quite a bit myself now, where I'll put something on, play it for a couple of hours, and then it's a case of I'll come back to that tomorrow. Tomorrow comes and it's a case of the whole day goes by and I haven't even thought about putting it back on.
Yeah, and that to me lately, to my surprise, has been Dishonored.
Dishonored, I had played 10 minutes of it.
And it didn't tickle you?
It did not tickle me, no. I have to admit there and then that it did not tickle me. I will carry on with it at some point, but I played that for 10 minutes, and then it was over Christmas, and I was in Norfolk for a few days, so came back, and I put Far Cry 3 on, and that sort of grabbed its hooks into me a little bit more than Dishonored.
Yeah. The thing with Dishonored to me is I could see it scratching my Splinter Cell itch. But the problem is the achievement for not killing anyone.
See, I'm not too bothered about that because I'm not really...
It's just the fact that...
Wait. We're talking about achievements about not killing people.
Yeah.
I'm going to link this into Dishonored now. I managed to get the Clean Hands achievement the other day.
Yeah, now, I did the first mission as an assassin, where you're sneaking into the city and you have to... you have to prevent someone from being murdered by the chief.
Oh, the observer. Wait, is this in Far Cry?
No, this is in Dishonored.
Okay, the chief observer, yeah.
And I was very careful, you know, sleep darts, being stealthy, studying, you know, things, upgrading my powers so I could, you know, see through walls and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was doing all of that, and then I completed the mission, and it took about, you know, 2 hours in, well, you know, 2 or 3 evenings in bits and pieces, you know, to do that. And then when I completed that mission, it came up with a summary screen, and it said 1 death.
Oh, gutted.
And I haven't gone back to it since, because I know that if that's robbed me of that, you know, getting that in a single achievement.
Okay. I can give the skinny on how to get clean hands in Dishonored, given to me by a dev that answered my questions on Twitter.
Right.
He said... that you can still get the clean hands achievement so long as you replay from that mission summary screen. So you have to go straight from that replay mission on that mission summary screen that you get after you just completed a mission. And obviously you needed to have you can't do it through, you know, you can select missions from the main menu at the start of the game. You can't do it from there. It's got to be a continuous play. So if you every chapter needs to be clean, you've got to not kill anyone, but if you mess up on the chapter you've just played,
then it has to, you have to go back, right?
You
back.
Have to replay, no, you replay that chapter, just now, that chapter. So to think about it, just to make it clear, so if you've started playing it and you got through like the first 2 chapters fine, and then you messed up the 3rd chapter, you've just got to replay that 3rd chapter and then continue.
Well, that would be fine, but it's the whole thing of it doesn't actually tell you if you bring up the status within a mission.
Yeah, that is the awkward thing, and I would
because
say...
Because I've got no idea over that entire mission where that person is supposed to have been killed.
The only thing you can do is to make sure that when you dart someone, that they're not going to fall off a ledge or into water, and that also if their bodies are not on high ground when you do that, that you pick them up and put them on top of something because rats might get them.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
It's annoying to me that achievement exists because I know it exists. So it's stopping me from, you know, because I liked the idea of if you just go around killing everyone, then the plague gets worse in the city.
Yeah.
So in the case of that game, it's putting me off because I don't know where that happened, so I would have to, I mean, I'd probably be able to do it in half the time because I know what I'm doing, and you know, there's no figuring out routes.
So in your opinion, if they released an update which actually did give you a kills so far per the chapter type thing on the pause screen, that would be a lot better
at the same time.
That would be a lot better for me because it would put my mind at rest, and it's a lot like in games, you know, like Gears of War and the Left 4 Deads, where if there's a cumulative achievement, they'll give you a progress
report.
Yeah, so you have to kill 5,000 zombies. You have killed 3,000. Okay, fine. But it's just the annoying thing, they're not knowing.
The annoying thing about that kind of thing is that it seems that every now and again it kind of gets reset, or you know, through some sort of like update or you know whatnot, and it's like. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I
but the Left 4 Deads have been really bad for that, at least on 360. Resetting the cumulative achievements, which is really annoying. Just talk about despite people who might see my Raptor, I do have a degree of games fatigue, because despite the fact that I have so many different games that I've never completed before lying around that I could pick up and play, I keep going back to the same handful of games. Mostly at the lead at the moment is Skyrim.
I was going to say Skyrim.
Yeah. this is my own form of games fatigue. I think it's, even despite my love-hate relationship with the glitches that appear in the game, it's the fact that I like it more than Oblivion, but not as much as Morrowind, but Morrowind involves more effort to play because it's on PC. For me, and I prefer playing on console, and it's just the fact that there's so many different things I can do in Skyrim. I haven't done everything that you could do in the game yet.
Well, you could play for tens of hours, if not hundreds, sometimes, without doing everything in the game.
Yeah, I think I've definitely put in at least 200 hours now into playing Skyrim since I got it in 2011, and yeah.
I have to say, I think I've turned, to a certain extent, into a backseat gamer. Well, not necessarily a backseat gamer, because I don't actually go, hey, do that! But yeah, Emily seems to obviously like playing the Fallouts and Skyrim, Morrowind, and you know, all that. And I've always been not necessarily cautious about them, but they've been such like amazingly epic games that I don't even want to touch them because they'll suck my life.
So it's okay if my life disappears, but not yours. Right, now I know.
Sorry, he'll just watch. It's all right, he'll just watch.
Put it this way, if I took them away from you, I think I would either be slapped or kicked out the house.
Okay. See, I think there might be violence.
Yes.
It's like, my better half is big into her Skyrim and things. The Fallout do not interest her.
Okay.
I think it's just she's always preferred fantasy universes rather than, you know, to sci-fi. Whereas I'm, you know, perfectly happy in both. Even I've got a bias towards sci-fi. But you know, I've played the Dragon Ages and Mass Effects and Fallouts and things like that. And yeah, it's just by and large, I think what I like at the moment is I like the big sandboxy games. I was even pondering playing through GTA 3 on Android. Even though I've got a big pile of two-play games.
Yeah.
On 360 and PS3, and my Steam list is obscene. Thanks to Humble Bundles and, you know, things like that.
I'm not sure. I think I was looking through my friends list on Steam the other day, and I'm pretty sure somebody on my Steam list, friends list, had certainly over 500 games.
I've not reached that.
Yeah. But,
next time you're on, have a look at my list. And see how much I've actually played.
I
seem to be more into the buying on Steam than I actually playing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are, but for some reason I keep on going back to Team Fortress 2 every now and again.
That's your comfort game.
Yeah, it is my comfort game.
But really, when we think about it, I mean, Team Fortress 2 is your comfort game. I think Skyrim's mine.
Well, you've had several over the years, including Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, Resident Evil 4 is a bit more of a hellish to set up.
Fallout 3.
Yes.
Has there been any more?
Morrowind, technically.
Yeah.
So I've either gone for huge open world games or the most linear things imaginable, namely Resident Evil 4. I used to play Final Fantasy X a lot. But yeah.
I do like the Final Fantasy games, but I have this tendency to basically go through almost the entire game, you know, getting all of the level ups and, you know, building myself up to be, you know, this absolutely amazing warrior that can do absolutely anything, and then just not bother completing the game because it's been like, yeah, I know what happens at the end, and you know, now that I've got Knights of the Round material and leveled it up so that it's like full and whatnot. Yeah,
I did precisely that with Lost Odyssey.
Oh my goodness.
Where I've played through almost the entire game.
Mm.
I'm on the final disc, and it's pretty much just the, hey, the world is now open to you because we expect you to go grind and level up until you can go and beat the bad guy.
Mm.
And it's like, I've enjoyed it really up until this point, and now it's just, go home.
Have you completed it before, though? Presumably.
No.
No.
You haven't?
And I haven't. Not Lost Odyssey. No.
Yeah, Lost Odyssey's... I mean, I started playing that. I got it on launch. And I've not completed it. I got onto Disc 2. And the fact of the matter is, I was finding that I had to grind on that perhaps more in between areas than I did with early Final Fantasies. And I was just like, I just can't... I like grinding to a certain... I mean, I do it a lot if I play a Pokemon game. Mm. And the other Final Fantasies, but Lost Odyssey kind of it tipped past to me the sort of acceptable level for doing this.
See, one of the things about grinding is that it's fun if you have regular milestones. So you say, say for example, I'll level up. Okay, leveling up. Oh, I'm actually quite close to leveling up this material. I'll level up the material. Oh, I've almost got this, super move. I can't, limit breaks.
Yeah.
Almost got this limit break. I'll do that. And that makes it more fun. But if it's like grinding for like an hour and you get like virtually nothing out of
it. If it's just stats based rather than ability.
Or it's just, you have to get certain skills up to like level 20, or you have to be level 40 before you can have enough health and enough time to realistically take on an enemy. And you just have to go away and beat up other things until you are.
I think the last game that I was happy to do that on was Resonance of Fate, and that was because it was unusual because it involved all the characters had guns and you were just jumping around and there was a slight active nature to the battle system
where
you had to pay attention and stuff because you'd miss your go and the enemies would kill you and stuff.
Yeah, I think the closest I've got to that kind of obsession, you know, with just doing everything in a game would probably be the Mass Effect. Possibly to an extent the Fallouts and Oblivions and Skyrims, but you know, not to the same degree. But yeah, I recognize that kind of thing, but in the meantime, it's in between those massive releases, it's finding something which will actually keep me entertained.
Yeah.
And there's been very little on, say, Xbox Live or PSN, which has, you know, really grabbed me. Mm. I mean, probably one of the most recent would be the Walking Dead game, which was bloody excellent. And
give me 1 second.
Paul's just checking whether or not we've actually got someone at the door, if the doorbell's acting like it's got a ghost.
It might be a poltergeist.
It might be a poltergeist.
Ooh, is this going to be left in?
It might be left in, just for humour. Yes,
fair enough.
Our doorbell's acting up and mysteriously going off in the middle of the night. There was no one there. It's either that or it's haunted.
It's the ghost of a cream horn.
The easier explanation.
Yeah. But no, I think just going back to the whole idea of games fatigue, I think the way it's exhibiting either is you just don't feel compelled to play games, or you just keep playing the same games even though there's lots of other new ones you can play. And for me, there's almost an anxiety actually with starting a new game, because I'm kind of like, am I going to be presented with the same old stuff? And I'm almost guaranteed actually to be presented with the same old tropes.
Sometimes I feel like I'm challenging a game, because I go on then, prove yourself to me. And quite a lot of them don't. But then I've noticed before, the first time I played Halo, I was not impressed.
Yeah.
And then it really grew on me. First time I played GoldenEye, I was, you know, it left me cold. And it was, why is there all this fuss about this game? But then, you know, then it grabbed me. So I know, you know, I've felt really just, you know, cold towards games that, you know, have really grown on me in the past. So it's trying to get that.
Yeah.
You know, the click.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, now I get it. And I even went back recently and started replaying Fallout 3, but on PC this time.
Okay.
Because I got the game of the year in one of the sales.
Okay.
And it's just, I've replayed this all this before, but maybe I can play it evil this time. And so I could play one of these new games I've never touched before. I could go back and play this.
It's almost like, because you know that you're guaranteed fun.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're playing a new game, it's more of a risk. It's more of a time kind of consuming risk.
It's like you know you can make a change in a sandbox game.
Yeah.
Even if it is a very binary good or evil choice that you can make a lot of the time. But when you have such, narrative games, if the narrative, again, partly because it's in a game, because it might not attract the caliber of writing than, some films do. So you might, if that's not carrying you along and it's not allowing you much freedom, if you just feel like you're having to jump through the hoops in the order that they're wanting you to. Yeah. The fact that you're doing it isn't necessarily enough anymore, and it used to be. Hmm. So it's just, oh, go, no, prove I'm going to enjoy this. And it's like, oh, right, I can't do this thing until you say, why don't you break the window? And now I can break the window. Why couldn't I break the window before? And it's just I end up getting irritated at a game and its mechanics rather than enjoying it because I can do it.
I do believe that's all we've got time for this evening, as we lament about our inability to click with games, spend time with games, feel like we can commit a long-term relationship to new games.
They're seeing other gamers.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's divorce is on the card.
Yeah, I thought it meant something.
I'm sorry, Mario. It's just, we can't go on.
It's Luigi's attractive green.
All right. Okay, so that's it for this week. And it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm a Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
And it's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, and it's good night from me, Paul Blair. Paul Blair on Twitter. And I have a website, paul-blair.com.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. I've also got a website, ek-creations.com. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. You can also find us at www.gamesfiends.com. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. I think that's everywhere we're at. Good night.
If you can think of any other avenues for which we can publish ourselves, just give us a tinkle.
No, we, it's enough. It's enough, people. Good night.
It's never enough.
Good night.
More.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.